You are listening to Fanthatrax.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
That's not true. That's impossible.
You're listening to Making Tracks. This is episode 124. I am your co-host, Mark Newbold, and joining me today is a man who, unbelievably, is even more chatty than Boba Fett. Mark, how are you doing?
I'm very well. That is a fact.
It is a fact, and this show spits nothing but facts. We've got loads to talk about today. People who listen to the show regularly will know that last week was the first episode of our reaction chat episodes, yeah, which is something that we're going to do every time there's a new show out, be it Book of Boba Fett, Andor, Kenobi, Bad Batch, whatever, Ahsoka, anything that's coming, of new films. I really enjoyed doing that last week because it felt very focused talking about the show. Did you get a kick out of it?
I did. I thought it was really fun, and it was fun because we literally did it about 20 minutes after you saw it, and then we just started talking about it. There was no prep or we didn't start digging around for stuff. It was
prep?
Just like...
What is this prep?
I think it's what other podcasts do.
Right,
but,
okay.
But clearly not us.
No, not us. Definitely not. I couldn't even remember the intro before we started recording it.
That's true.
Before we get into it, as always, we're going to talk about if anything has come into our respective collections. Something did come. It was a box from Hasbro, a Bring Home the Bounty box with figures and,
nice,
and toys and all sorts of malarkey. But to Casa de Mulcaster, has anything turned up yet?
I suppose you've got to remember that January has got like 69,000 weeks in it. I think we're still only like the fourth week in, and it's a very long month. So I've had to curtail my spending a little bit after Christmas. But one thing did turn up, and I have my good friend Mr. Phil Parker to blame for this. When I was around at his collection, he showed me this book called Great Science Fiction Film Stories,
right,
which was published by St. Michael, Marks and Spencer's, and it has Star Wars, E.T. the Extraterrestrial, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and Star Trek The Wrath of Khan. So I'm guessing this would have been released some point after 1982, because I think Wrath of Khan was out in 82. Yeah,
so E.T.,
it's one of those books that actually on a bookshelf looks quite posh because it's kind of got that leather-bound kind of edging with the kind of silver embossed kind of writing. It's got that lovely old book smell that I just absolutely adore.
Yes, I'm familiar with the book. If it's the same one, it's got a red leather spine, hasn't it?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, and is it R2 and 3PO on the cover?
It's Luke and 3PO.
Luke and 3PO,
it's on, Tatooine, it's from A New Hope, yeah. So it's probably the same one. I mean, I'd never seen it, or if I'd seen it, I've never paid any attention to it. It didn't really cost me anything at all, really. I think it was probably more to actually get it posted than to actually pay for the item. So, that's what I'm telling Karen. So.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, we've got to get your story straight.
I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson, and you are following Fanthatrax.
Interesting news, really interesting news. Mary Elizabeth Winstead, she is supposed to be, she's been mentioned to be, could be, might not be, turning up in the Ahsoka show on Disney Plus. Looking at her career, looking at the stuff that she's done over the years, she's been in some great stuff. She was in Die Hard, she was in Scott Pilgrim, Love, Death and Robots, an episode of that which was brilliant. What kind of character do you think will be played by her? What do you see? I'm seeing a smuggler.
I was thinking somebody associated with the Fringe, to be honest. I don't see her like an Imperial. Maybe somebody a little bit cool. She's got that intellectual look about her, so maybe some kind of scientist or something like that. Yeah, smuggler, that makes sense. I'm sure Ahsoka probably will need a ship. I don't think we ever see Ahsoka with her own ship, so she's used the Martez sisters and that to get around the galaxy, I think, in previous stories and stuff. So, yeah, potentially, smuggler with a ship, that would be cool. And I think with Ahsoka anyway, it's possibly going to be touching on those kind of fringe communities again. Sounds like a perfect role for her.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think we've obviously, the archetype is Han Solo. There's been characters of that ilk, Dash Rendar and characters like that. There was stuff in some of the West End Games role play supplements with female smugglers as well, with cool ships and characters. She would be great in a role like that. I still want to see Jennifer Lawrence turn up in Star Wars as a smuggler. So there's certain actresses that have got that kind of edge that you can see them in that sort of role. I agree. I don't see her as an Imperial. I don't particularly see her as a rebel. But then again, you look at a character like Cassian Andor, who very much lives in the grey shadows, who's prepared to do the dark stuff. You could see her in a role like that. She was in a film earlier this year. Forgive me, I can't think the title of it. She was on the clock. Her character was going to die. There was nothing they could do about it. And she had a mission to carry out. And I've never seen anyone quite so relentless in a film. It was absolutely brilliant. And she was brilliant in it. Give her that meaty stuff. Give her the action. Give her the drama. Give her the edge. I think she'll really run with it. So, yeah, so it's good news. Mary Elizabeth Winstead coming into Ahsoka. And, of course, that means if she's in Ahsoka, like at the end of last week's episode of Book of Boba Fett, we got the do-do-do-do of the Mandalorian. These characters can all cross over. She could be bumping helmets with Boba Fett at some point. She could be mixing it up with Mando. Who knows? It's a good place to be.
Hello, I'm Dennis Lawson, and you're listening to FanthaTrax.
So, fans of a certain age will remember that years and years and years and years and years ago, at the back end of the last century, the hot name attached to the teenage Anakin Skywalker was Leonardo DiCaprio, coming off the beach, coming off Titanic, hottest name in Hollywood, which he has been pretty much for the last 20 years. He didn't get the role. The role went to Hayden Christensen. But it turns out Leonardo DiCaprio is, was, always has been, and probably always will be, a bit of a Star Wars fan because he tried his best to get his co-star in Don't Look Up, Netflix film. If you've not seen it, see it. It's absolutely brilliant. Jonah Hill tried to get him into the galaxy far, far away and miserably failed. Jonah Hill, not a fan of Star Wars, really couldn't give a hoojibs backside about it. It just makes me smile to think that somebody of DiCaprio's calibre would be so fervently into Star Wars. If indeed this is true, no reason to think it isn't. What do you make of this?
I mean, I was just thinking that wasn't it confirmed that Leonardo DiCaprio's worst date with Camilla Morione, basically she said that he made her watch a Star Wars saga and just pranced around pretending to use a lightsaber for the whole time. That turned out to be fake. So I wonder if maybe this is kind of a similar kind of ilk. But saying that, you would kind of think, and maybe it's just a generational thing, and it's maybe we're just tarring everybody with the same brush, but you kind of think males of a certain age are pretty much all Star Wars fans, or have at least watched Star Wars and don't mind it. But, you know, for him to kind of say that he's like not watched them, that's quite surprising. You know, I do find that quite hard to believe, but maybe that's just because we're surrounded all the time with, you know, people who are Star Wars fans, who live and breathe and have always seen Star Wars. It does raise a question, though. The question is, for you, sir, I know people who basically either have seen Star Wars and like it or love it or, you know, beyond that, or basically haven't really seen Star Wars. You know, it's not, they're not really interested. But I've never really met anybody who's turned around and said to me, honest to God, Mark, I actually don't like Star Wars. Can you think of anybody you know that actually, you know, has actually told you, come clean and said, I really don't like Star Wars?
Yes, I can. And it was always very awkward because I used to be in bands years and years and years ago. And one band member I was in, two or three bands with, Macca, great guy, but never, never, ever understood why I collected all the stuff I collect and went to the conventions and watched the films and was so into it. He didn't get that I wasn't as passionate about rock as he was passionate about rock. And I love my rock music, of course. And he just didn't get it. So I would sort of say, well, have you ever seen, you know, you're ragging on Star Wars. Have you ever seen Empire Strikes Back? Empire what? He would just, I mean, I think he was purposefully obtuse sometimes.
But yes.
He would be like, you know, if ever there was a time when you were a bit skint and he was like, what are you moaning about? We're not just selling your stuff. Dude, not how it works. Yeah, no. It's just stuff. It's not just stuff. And there would be arguments about, it's not just stuff. Yeah, it is. So you wouldn't sell the General. He had a flying V called the General. You wouldn't sell the General. No. Well, I'm not going to sell my stuff. So he just didn't get it. So yes, he's the only one though. I've had people who watched it and were like, yeah, not my thing. So that's fair enough. At least he watched it. Doesn't have to be everyone's thing. But I take your point. And I'd love to, I mean, like reading the quote here, you know, the quote from Jonah Hill. Leo made me watch The Mandalorian when we were making Don't Look Up. And it was like, Baby Yoda was so cute, but I just didn't give a because I don't know anything about what it was about. So, which is fair enough, because I suppose if you've never watched it, we're the worst example in the world because we're talking twice a week about it on podcasts and writing about it on the website and all that malarkey, and you're trooping it and I'm doing all this other stuff. But it is so in the zeitgeist, isn't it? It's never left. How can you not know who Darth Vader is, or Chewie, or R2 or 3PO, Yoda, or Baby Yoda?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's increasingly harder for people to really, you know, at least in, I guess, for, you know, the Western world, to completely live under a rock somewhere and not know something of Star Wars, you know, just through, like you said, kind of a zeitgeist, so kind of almost through osmosis.
Hey, man, it's me, Kevin Smith, Star Wars fan, Fantatrax fan.
If you imagine coming in, you know, to watch The Mandalorian fresh without really knowing anything about Star Wars, there's no prologue, you're just dropped into that world. Out of the two live action series that we've had so far, The Mandalorian and The Book of Boba Fett, Mandalorian is the one that I think you could probably watch, which is more accessible to the non-fan. Even with the flashbacks in The Book of Boba Fett, there's still so many questions hanging over the backstory of Boba Fett. For somebody to kind of come in and watch that fresh without having seen any Star Wars, I think that would probably be a harder sell by the creatives. And maybe actually they just don't. Maybe they, you know, we just assume everybody knows who Boba Fett is and that's the line we're going to take. So that's where we're going to go with it.
Well, it kind of ties into something, I think, that I was going to bring up later, was that the Children of Blood and Bone book that Lucasfilm were going to make is now the rights have lapsed and it's gone back to Paramount. Yeah. It's sad that they're not going to make it because it was clearly going to be an interesting project. Rick Famuyiwa was going to direct it. But nevertheless, the good news, the good side, is that it means now they focus on Star Wars, Indy and Willow. Lots of Star Wars. So Lucasfilm are clearly honing in on that legacy batch of properties they've got, give us stuff that we want, and you would think everybody's happy. But I think in amongst that is that there will always be projects like Book of Boba Fett that is essentially answering a question that's lingered for, 40 years near it 40 years next year. You know, what the hell happened to Boba Fett? Did he get out of the Sarlacc pit? We never knew. The sequel trilogy gave us the answer to a degree of what happened next. And The Mandalorian is starting to fill in some of the gaps of what happened to the galaxy. But specifically with Fett, it's like, well, okay, in flashbacks, there's very cool flashbacks, which I think are kind of done now that he doesn't need the Bacta anymore.
Yeah.
The sequence is like that. But then you'll get something like The Mandalorian, for example, which it's a weird one. Mando as a character, physically as a character, there's a lot of very familiar iconography in the Book of Boba Fett. You've got IG-11 that's like IG-88, you've got Baby Yoda that's like Yoda, you've got Mandalorian that's like Boba Fett. And Mando, in his own show, is more action-orientated, more of a man of action, in the vein that you would inherently think of Boba Fett being. But what they've decided to do, because in the real world, Tamira Morrison 61, you've got a more seasoned actor. Fett's been through this other stuff. It's almost like the same. Well, if you want the action Mando, there's the Mandalorian. If you want this different version of a character you've known for 40 years, here's the Book of Boba Fett. You do need to know a bit about Boba Fett to get the Book of Boba Fett. You don't really need to know much about anything to get the Mandalorian. So I think you've hit on something there.
I mean, now that you've actually brought up Children of Blood and Bones, it does raise a question. The thing is, with Lucasfilm, they are relying on Star Wars and they are relying on, to a degree, Willow and Indiana Jones. But I suppose the question is, do they need to start to create and look for new franchises to keep the company fresh and vibrant, or, you know, they've got enough but they don't actually need to look for new productions and they could probably just, you know, hang their hat pretty much like Lucasfilm has done up until this point on those three or four properties?
In a word, yes, I think there's enough Star Wars to be made that they can really focus on that. There's certainly more to be done with Indiana Jones. I never really thought that there would be much more to do with Willow, and yet they're doing a series, not a film. There's definitely stuff to be done there, and there are other properties they own, a lot of LucasArts bits and bobs if they want to. And that was always the thing back in the day, wasn't it? When Lucas was expanding the company post-Jedi, you know, LucasArts was a big part of it, you know, and all the other elements of the company, I'm saying the company with waggling my air quotes, all centered around Skywalker Ranch. It was such a fertile place and there was so much going on. Today, it's very different. It's more IP-based. It's more about those particular Star Wars as a brand, which is really, you'd imagine, why Disney bought the whole of Lucasfilm rather than just pilfering Star Wars from it, buy the whole thing. If they didn't make anything other than Star Wars, there's enough to be doing for the next 20 years comfortably. With a license and with a story and a palette, a sandbox like Star Wars, they could release 3 Star Wars shows, something every 3 months for the next 20 years, and multiple seasons of certain shows, films, as and when they want to do it. You think if they can't do that with a palette like Star Wars, with a canvas like Star Wars, They're not doing it right, are they?
I'm still hanging out and hoping that one day somebody somewhere from Lucasfilm is going to announce that there's going to be a live-action Disney Plus version of The Secrets of Monkey Island. You know, don't worry about developing new YA books. Look at what you got already, and then give us LeChuck's Revenge or something like that.
Full throttle for me. That's the one I'd like to see.
Works for me.
Hi, this is Julie Dolan, the voice of Princess Leia, and you're listening to Fanthatrax. It's your only hope.
This Saturday, just gone, in Lichfield in Staffordshire, at the Hub at St Mary's Church, right in the middle of the city, a new Star Wars exhibition called May the Toys Be With You opened. On the Friday, they had a press day, and I was lucky enough to be invited, and I spent half an afternoon with Matt Fox, wonderful guy. We had a walk around the exhibition, showed me everything that's in there, loads of vintage toys, really great posters, amazing UK quad posters on the walls, all sorts of stuff. We had a walk around and a chat, and here's my 10 minutes talking to Matt Fox from May the Toys Be With You.
So we're at the Hub at St Mary's in the heart of Lichfield in Staffordshire, and I'm stood here with Matt Fox. How's it going, Matt?
Hello, Mark. It's going really well, thanks. Yeah, surrounded by Star Wars.
I know, the best place to be, isn't it? We literally are. I mean, the room we're in at the moment is, well, it's all vintage. But before I get too geeky and nerdy and lose myself in all the plastic, explain a little bit about the logic behind and the thought behind and the desire behind doing this exhibition. What kickstarted it back in the day when you first did the first one?
Well, the exhibition's called May the Toys Be With You. And I guess the nucleus, the germ of the idea formulated in my brain when I used to be on a forum called Rebel Scum, which was sort of, I guess, the big collecting forum about 10 years ago before most people went over to Facebook. Yeah. And what I did was I sort of photographed all my collection really nicely. Each one, you know, X-Wing got an individual photograph, TIE Fighter got an individual photograph. And then I sort of like captioned them and gave them some details and context. And I sort of created this kind of like, I guess, like an object catalogue as a limelight on Rebel Scum. And it was really well received and got lots and lots of views. In fact, I think it's the most viewed thread on that site. And I guess doing that sort of helped percolate the idea that actually this could be an exhibition. And I went to my local museum, the Beanie Museum in Canterbury, with the idea to do this, and it was going to sort of coincide with The Force Awakens coming out in 2015. And they were really keen that it would bring in some, you know, a new demographic of people that maybe don't normally see themselves as museum visitors. So it was a big journey, but I got it all set up and all looking swanky and great, and it was fantastic. And it opened up with 2,500 people visiting it on day one.
Wow.
And it broke all the attendance records for the museum. So since then, it's gone on and on to lots of different sites. And here it is now in Lichfield, home of Mark Newbold. So I'm really pleased to be here.
You've made my day being here, you really have. When you take something like this, because we're in it, we're Star Wars fans and we know what this is, we've played with the toys, we understand what they're about. But when you take it to somewhere new, explain it to new people who maybe aren't, they know what Star Wars is, how can you not? But they're not steeped in it like we are. What's their reaction when you start to roll this stuff out, lay it out, and they start to see it? And more importantly, they start to see other people's reactions to it?
The reactions have been really, really positive. I think it's intergenerational property, Star Wars.
Yeah.
There's people of a certain age, as in yours and my age, Mark,
yes.
Who sort of like go, oh, I used to own that. And it's usually said with a mixture of longing and regret.
Oh, regret.
I used to have all that up in the loft and Mum and Dad put it in a jumble sale or sent it off to the charity shop. So there's people that actually remember the toys. And then there's people that actually just think they're really cool, that, you know, children or teenagers or, you know, 20-something and 30-something, that are a bit too old for it. But what we can do in this exhibition is to tell a bit of a coherent story. And it begins with the early bird set, for example.
Yeah.
And then we go through the Star Wars toy line with lots of interesting things from that. There's a little bit about the production of them. We've got some prototypes in there. And we've got some other stuff from the tooling of the toys. And then it goes through Empire toy line, Return of the Jedi, and it ends up with some of the more interesting oddball type things from the end of the line, like the droids and some of the stuff that came out of Turkey, the blue stars.
Yeah.
And we've even got some things that were never created, but were planned, the unproduced toys that Kenner would have done, like a tandem X-Wing, for example. And the Tarkin figure, these sort of things that were kind of in the works if the toy line had only but continued. sadly, it all ended up, you know, around 1986 with a bit of a fire sale.
Yeah.
And we've even got things like the Woolworths, you know, six-pack baggie where they just had to sell a whole bunch of figures for 99p right at the end.
Crazy.
You know, He-Man, Transformers were sort of coming in and it was time for Star Wars to go. And that's really where the exhibition ends.
I'll tell you my horror story, right? And I think I've told it on this podcast before, but I'm going to tell it again because you've not heard it. I used to work at a toy shop back in the 80s, about a quarter of a mile from here, maybe not even that far. And the boss upstairs had a box, a big box, full of Star Wars toys. And he said, "Mark, I need the space. Just make me an offer. I need the room more than I need the toys." And my answer was, "I've already got them. I don't need them again." And these were boxed Star Wars, Empire, Jedi, you name it. It was a box full of it, and I just let it go. I had no idea. That's my regret.
Oh, but for a time machine, eh?
Exactly,
I know.
So of these things, I mean, you know, you had them as a kid, I had them as a kid, we all have our favourites. Which one, an impossible question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, is that if there's one thing you would love to point to somebody who's brand new to Star Wars and go, this is the thing that will grab your attention and make you want to know more about it, which one would you point to?
Well, one of them, I think, has to be the Millennium Falcon, with the lid off, and you can see inside the chess set and the hanging ball there and the little smuggler's stuff. That's obviously one of these real big iconic items. But also, I'd say the Palitoy Death Star.
Yes.
Because it's really fun to display that filled with stormtroopers and Death Squad commanders, and it looks like they're all busying around their job. I think the Death Star really holds up as a fantastic toy. It was created, obviously, out of cardboard, out of necessity to keep costs down, because the American version of the toy was made solid of plastic. And I think that necessity ended up with a better toy. So we've got this sort of like fantastic futuristic doll's house with so many chambers, so much play value, and it looks brilliant on display. So we've got it here in its own cabinet just by itself with the lighting on it, and it just looks magic.
One word that's associated with Star Wars toys a lot is, and I love this word, toyetic. There's something about Star Wars toys, especially vintage Star Wars toys, that just feel like you want to grab them and play with them, perhaps in a way that the newer figures don't quite have that, even though they're more detailed, more, you know, the details there, the accessories and so on and so forth. What is it? I'm trying to find the words. I'm looking at this cabinet of Star Wars stuff. What is it about these that makes them so desirable and so wonderful?
I think it's because they put a lot of thought into the engineering. For example, we're looking at a bit of a Hoth diorama here, and you've got the radar laser cannon. It could have just been a boring radar laser cannon, but no, it's got a button at the back that explodes it. Next to that, we've got the scout walker, and that's got a button that makes the legs pop up and down like doing the chicken walk. You know, they put the little hatch in the back of the Tauntaun for Han to sit in. So everything had a bit of thought. Even things like the Rancor that we're also looking at here had that mouth that chomps up and down.
Yes.
So, you know, they gave you things to do with the toys. And it was such a toolbox. But by having a big toy line, all of these different environments and stuff, you could kind of mash it all together and really create your own plane. And you didn't. I don't think people really did sort of like follow the films necessarily. You just had your own expanded universe going on your living room floor, didn't you?
Well phrased. And I'm looking across, you've got some more modern figures, the retro collection, just to give people a flavour of what you would get today, along with some other elements there. And I don't want to give too much away because we want people to come and see it for themselves. But it strikes me that right now, if you're watching Book of Boba Fett or The Mandalorian, for example, you're somebody who's new to Star Wars, maybe you've got Disney Plus and it's an option that you can watch it. There's a Rancor. We've just seen that Rancor in Book of Boba Fett. There's an AT-ST. You saw one in Rogue One not that long ago. There's a lot of elements here. TIE Fighters, which you've seen in The Mandalorian. There's X-Wings in Mandalorian again. There's lots of vehicles that are vintage. Sandcrawler from Rise of Skywalker. There's lots of vehicles that are very relevant right now, but are actually 40 plus years old.
I think it's one of these fantastic things, and it's one of the reasons why you know, the toys are still as popular as they are today.
Yeah.
And they could easily have diminished. I don't think if we'd have ended up with just the original movies, there'd been no prequels, no sequels, no Disney acquisition. They would slowly have diminished, and the collecting market would be probably a lot smaller than it is now. But the fact that it's still going keeps them alive, you know, and it's the reason why very, very early Batman toys are still alive and still very valuable.
Yes.
So I think the toys will continue to be highly collected, highly valuable, you know, right through our lifespans at least.
Yeah. As an exhibition, your hope to keep, you're in Lichfield for a while and then you move to another location. Is that your hope? You'd like to keep this thing going, show as many parts of the country as possible what there is about these Star Wars vintage toys, just keep this going?
Yeah, absolutely. I really enjoy sharing it.
That comes across.
There's an old saying that I use, which is collecting is a sickness and sharing it is the only cure. So, if I had all of these just boxed up in the loft, it would just be my own little madness. But here, yeah. I can share my insanity with other people, and hopefully they get to enjoy seeing them. And it's a completely free exhibition. It's on here till March the 22nd. Anyone can come on in and enjoy her looking at the toys. Hopefully you might come back again, Mark.
Bring the
family at some point and come and enjoy staring at old Star Wars toys. And I should say, it's not just the toys we've got. We've also got quite a lot of cinema memorabilia.
I was going to ask you about that. Yes. Gorgeous posters.
I really love the movie posters, and they really help give the whole era context.
Yeah.
And they help date it to that really particular era of the end of the 70s and the 1980s. And there's cinema tickets, and there's interesting bits and bobs that you can come in and actually sort of see some quite deep history in terms of how Star Wars was released.
Absolutely. There's American elements in here, there's Japanese elements, there's Turkish, as you mentioned, there's bits from around the world, but the crux, the heart of it, very much feels like it's a Palatoy thing. It feels very British, especially, as you say, with the quads, which are unique to the UK. So there's a very hometown feel to it, which is wonderful.
Yes, yeah, I like the British stuff in particular, and I have to set myself collecting parameters. And when it came to the movie posters, although I love a lot of foreign movie posters, I'd go on and on forever.
Yeah.
It's a slippery slope, so you have to have goalposts, so you don't move them. So I just collect the British movie posters. Yeah,
brilliant. Well, thank you so much for sharing this with us. It's wonderful. We'll talk about this on the site endlessly because it's so cool to have something like this available that people will come and see. Like you say, it's free. It's here till the 22nd of March. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
So back in November at Wales Comic Con in Telford, still couldn't get my head around that, we had the good fortune to speak to loads of Star Wars guests, and among those was Jay Manchand. He's a Topps artist, does a lot of official Star Wars art. We had a really good chat about all things Star Wars, and this is the fruits of our endeavours. So this is myself and Jay Manchand at Wales Comic Con in Telford in November of 2021.
So we stood in an archway leading into a hall at Wales Comic Con. I'm here with artist Jay Manchand. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very, very happy to be here after so long.
Yeah, we've spoke to loads of people, Star Wars related, obviously.
Of course.
About, you know, we've been locked down, doors bolted for feels like forever, and now we're getting out and about again. How's it feel for you being out, and also being an artist, being able to show people what you've been doing in those 2 years?
It's been great. I mean, for lockdown, that I was working at home in my studio, and I've just worked throughout it. So it's nice to get out, see people, and be able to present my work properly for the first time. So yeah, it's really exciting. It's just nice to be here.
Yeah. And has it been a productive time for you? I mean, I guess having that nothing to distract you has probably not been a bad thing.
It's been great. And also, I found a lot of my collectors and people that tend to commission work from me, they must be sat at home looking at the same four walls like all of us, yeah, and just want artwork to put on it. So yeah, I found it has been really productive. Yeah, it's been great.
And how's Wales been? Because we've found it to be a really friendly, welcoming day. Great room, good atmosphere. How's it been for you?
It's been brilliant. I mean, the space alone, they've opened up an extra room, so yeah, it doesn't feel cramped, especially under current circumstances. It feels like everyone can move about freely and safely, and it's been organised great, and it's just been fun. It's been so much fun just to be out here and enjoying it like everyone else.
We did notice that when we came a couple of years ago, they hadn't opened that extra little bit, and it has made all the difference.
Yeah, definitely,
it?
Yeah.
So what's next for you? In terms of conventions, are there anything else lined up? I'm thinking maybe not this year, but anything lined up for next year?
I just wanted to ease myself back into it, obviously assess what it's like, because post-COVID we don't know what shows are like
very
for
true
artists, because it's completely different from the guests. It's been really productive, so I'm looking forward to doing more next year, hopefully. We'll just see what's planned and what's ahead.
And work-wise, what's on your slate that you can talk about?
That I can talk about, I have done work for an upcoming top set called Masterworks that will be due out in the near future. And I've also created a piece for the Printed in Blood Halloween art book, and that will be published, and we're just waiting to hear when that's going to be released. And that's pretty exciting because it's branching out from Star Wars.
I was going to say, where is most of your artistic sort of focus right now? Because obviously there's so much Star Wars content coming. We know that will never dry up, but then that could never dry up anyway. You're always going to have stuff to draw. So where are you sort of focusing yourself at the moment?
Predominantly Star Wars. It always has been, always will be. It's from a childhood, it's always been a passion. So I think I will never run out of things to paint and draw from Star Wars, and especially because I love the weirdo aliens in the background. Yes, so yes, the stranger the better. And there's just, well, there's a galaxy full of creatures that are still yet to be painted. So yeah, just doing what I'm doing at the moment. But as for other franchises, I tend to limit that at the moment to official sets. So I recently, during the pandemic, I did work for Game of Thrones for Rittenhouse.
Wow.
And that was brilliant. That was a really good project to be involved in. I was one of 11 artists, so it was quite a small group of us, so that was brilliant. So yeah, for other licenses that aren't Star Wars, I tend to just do the tops and Upper Deck and Rittenhouse sets.
Brilliant. So you've got plenty to get you busy.
Oh, I'm busy. I'm always busy. Yeah, which I enjoy.
Fantastic. It was really nice to see you again.
Thank you. You too.
I'm certain we'll see you at a show sometime next year.
Absolutely. I hope so.
We haven't had a listener question for a while because we've been slammed with interviews and Book of Boba Fett reviews. But now that the Book of Boba Fett reviews are part of Reaction Chat, we've got time to get more listeners' questions in. And we've had a really cool one come in. This was from Hass Aslam on Twitter. And this is his question. It's a great question. Do you think any of the upcoming shows or the High Republic will ever neutralise the toxicity and bring balance back to the force of Star Wars fans? So it's a quite to-the-point question. Do you think that anything that's coming up, or possibly stuff within the High Republic going forward, do you think any of it is going to calm the up-and-down nature of the Star Wars fandom? Or do you think, really, expanding on the question, do you think that's just going to be part of Star Wars fandom going forward forever, and you either get in with it or you ignore it? What do you reckon?
Yes to the latter, I think. I mean, it would be great to kind of go back to a slightly more harmonious time, but then I think we'd probably have to do away with the internet and all the benefits that actually the internet does give us from time to time. My mind goes blank as to what they are right now. The difference is that, you know, the harmonious time, when we think about, I don't know, going back to the original trilogy, was down to the fact that we didn't really have anybody to talk to other than your mates. And you know, even then, I think Mark's kind of discussed this before on the podcast, you know, your best mate's brother or something will have some kind of crazy idea and you kind of get into an argument about that, you know, but it was done with, and it obviously wasn't toxic. You just kind of, you disagreed and what have you, and you moved on. I think the problem is that everybody now has a platform. Obviously, everybody's always had an opinion, but now the platforms such as Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and stuff allows people to share their opinions and the force. And obviously everybody now is a film critic, and everybody feels like they know how to make Star Wars better than Kathleen Kennedy or Disney or Lucasfilm. Unfortunately, it might be that something gets released which is so bad and so off Star Wars that actually the whole fandom actually agrees, and then maybe that's what needs to happen. Look at even something like The Book of Boba Fett, which I think before it was released, I was thinking was probably going to be a slam dunk. But after the first episode, there's people saying, this isn't my Star Wars and I'm not watching this anymore, this is rubbish, I can't believe they've done this to his character, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, for me anyway, I scroll past my Facebook page and, you know, I see some people kind of like say, I don't like it, and other people say, I like it. But actually, I just scroll past and I don't really engage too much, and I don't really engage on Twitter. So therefore, I'm least aware of the toxicity of the fandom. But obviously it's fair, and it's fair in every single fandom now, I think. I mean, after No Time to Die, the James Bond fandom got a little bit more divided, and obviously Harry Potter's got divided and Star Trek's divided and DC and, you know, even Marvel to an extent. So I think when there's something that's creative that's being released by somebody's always going to think they can do it better or know what the characters should be doing when they're doing something else.
Yeah, you used a great term earlier when we were just chewing over ideas, doom scrolling.
Yeah,
which is a brilliant, brilliant phrase that I've never heard before. And there is an element of that. I think people do go out looking for bad news. And also because, and you say about the internet and how it's used and such, and we all interface with the internet in a different way. I like going on and just mooching around and seeing what's going on and being nosy, basically. And I don't engage a huge amount. But the right things, i.e. the positive stuff, I do like to engage with. But I do see the negative stuff, which can really be grating after a while.
Yeah.
So I do tend to steer away from it. There is such a currency. There is literally a currency in the negative side of the fandom, because it's monetized by certain YouTubers. It is monetized and weaponized as well.
Mm.
People pile on so quick these days onto various things. There doesn't seem to be much discourse, general chatty, friendly discourse. And when you do see it, it's almost like everyone's patting themselves on the back for their politeness, when that should be a given. Tamir Morrison on his more talkative Boba Fett, "I'm talking too much." Basically, in the conversation, Tem had said, I think on the page, as it's written for the script of Book of Boba Fett, there's way too much talk for Fett. Fett's not a talkative guy. So when Jon Favreau leaves the set, he's like, "Can't we cut some of the scripts? There's too much talk here. Boba Fett doesn't talk this much." And Favreau was like, "No, I want you to act it all out. This is how I wrote it. This is what I want done." But if you look at the characters of pre-Sarlacc and post-Sarlacc, they're two different guys, aren't they? Got these differing opinions. And like you said, Book of Boba Fett, you would look at a character like Fett and go, slam dunk. That's going to be a bigger hit than The Mandalorian, surely. Nobody knew who he was 3 years ago. And now it's the biggest show they've ever had on Disney Plus, pretty much, isn't it? And yet Boba Fett, so everybody knows who Boba Fett is. Even people who only know a little bit about Star Wars go, "I've heard of Boba Fett. I don't know anything about him, but I've heard of him." So you think name recognition alone is going to make it a slam dunk. And yet it's building. I think season two will build even more, should we get one. But in terms of sort of neutralising the toxicity, you look at Andor, that's the one I'm excited about. But there's a lot of people who love Rogue One, but a lot of people will be like, "Which one was that? Was that the one with Rey?" So there's still that recognition problem with Rogue One that they've had for years. Obi-Wan feels like the one that could keep a lot of people happy, but then if it's not exactly what certain people want.
Well, this is it. Because you think about it, you know, and we have discussed this in previous podcasts, and I think I've said it, you know, in my current headcanon, again, slightly led to believe with the expanded universe as well, I think, Ben lands on Tatooine. He stays on Tatooine for the 20-odd years, and then he leaves to go to Alderaan, and then he ends up on Death Star, and that's when he meets Darth Vader. And now we know, and I think this is why they maybe leaked it as well and announced it. You know, we know that Hayden Christensen's going to be Darth Vader in Obi-Wan Kenobi. And Ewan McGregor sort of come out and said about, you know, it would be quite fun to, you know, for these guys to have another kind of like showdown. So we expect that there should be another showdown between Vader and Obi-Wan. But I do wonder if actually that's maybe why they've done that with the Kenobi announcements, is to maybe just kind of seed it so that when it does happen, there's not suddenly going to be this massive kind of, "Whoa, I can't believe it, you've just done this," and rah, rah, rah. And the thing is, right, Star Wars is 44 years old now, or thereabouts, okay? There's so much Star Wars for everyone. There's people who really aren't actually a huge fan of the original trilogy. And then there's people who really love the sequel trilogy and, you know, everything else in between. And people whose favourite film is a solo Star Wars story. Mm-hmm. And actually there's people who I'd spoken to at Celebration who said, "Do you know what? I'm not a huge fan of the films, but actually the books is where I get my Star Wars. That is my Star Wars." You kind of go, "Well, you know what? That's fair. My Star Wars is this and that and a bit of everything." But I'm not going to start shouting and calling out. And I think it comes down to the fact that there's a certain level of animosity and anonymity with social media. I mean, you can put up a tweet. If you don't have a photo of yourself as your profile and you're not like at Mark Mulcastle or at Mark Newbold, and you've got like a fairly kind of clever kind of like handle, you can say whatever the hell you like. Yeah. And the chances are it will never get associated with you. We had this with forums all the time, you know, going back before really social media was a thing and we did everything on bulletin boards. You know, it was so easy to have these what we'd call keyboard warriors who would just basically go off on a rant, bit like me now, would spend the whole weekend just arguing with people on a forum somewhere. And yet you'd go to a convention and you'd actually see that person and they'd be the nicest person. But yet, actually, when it came down to their opinions and how they expressed it via the typed word, they were real dicks.
It is an issue beyond Star Wars, really.
Yeah, to think it's society, and it's not just Star Wars. That's the thing. And I think that's possibly slightly depressing to kind of think about that, but it is.
I'm Brian Herring, BB-8 puppeteer, and you're listening to Fantha Tracks. That'll learn you.
Will one of these projects, be it High Republic on the written page or the Acolyte, which is High Republic, or other stuff, be the one that brings the balance back to the Force, to use a tired old cliche? I don't really think so, because I think even going back to 1999 when Phantom Menace came out, and that split the fandom because some people couldn't handle that it wasn't the original trilogy. It was so different. It was a film made for the same age bracket that the original films were made for, but those people were 20 years older. And so they were, why aren't you catering to me? Because George caters to the 11-year-old boys and girls that are going to come and become the next generation of Star Wars fans. That's why. And the fact that you and me and anybody above the age of 20 is into Star Wars is a huge bonus to their benefit, because it's not made for people 20 and up. It's made for kids. The fact that we still love it, enjoy it, take something from it. I think a lot of Star Wars anyway is the evocative nature of it. It's not just stuff, it's memories. It's all the memories you associate with it. And that's something quite unique to not just Star Wars, but Star Wars does it better than most, I think. But I don't think there's a single thing that's going to unite the fandom that everyone's going to go, that's the best thing ever. Even amongst a film that's great ratings with the critics and great ratings with the fans and huge box office, there'll always be somebody that goes, I thought it was rubbish. Just because they want to be the guy that is the one that says, well, I thought it was rubbish. So that's a social media thing as well. But then again, you kind of meet that guy down the pub as well. So it's just people.
Mark, can you let the good listeners know how we can get in touch if they do want to send us a question, comment, thought, or in this case, complaint?
If you want to be a part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit panthertracks.com or check out the free... Panther Tracks app through the App Store to follow us on your mobile device. You can reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@panthertracks.com. Keep them coming. We want more. Comment, like, and share on any of our social media feeds at Panther Tracks. And be sure to subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Temple for composing the Panther Tracks intro, Adam O'Brien for our Making Tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. For me, right now, till Wednesday, that's me done for this episode.
Well, thank you very much, matey. And yes, I will catch up with you some point on Wednesday. Until then, take care. And everybody else, thank you very much for listening. I hope you tune in or download or whatever it is you need to do to listen to the reaction chat on Wednesday. And so until then, stay safe, take care, and may the Force be with you.
Coming up next on Fantha Tracks Radio, it's another episode of Making Tracks.